Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Tonight's program is presented in partnership with the Lafayette Library and Learning Center's Glenn C. Borg Learning Consortium. You can find the club online at commonwealthclub.org where you can listen to audio of past programs. I'm Laura Anthony, reporter at ABC 7 and your moderator for tonight's program. It's called A Blueprint for Growth in Contra Costa County. Our expert panel will discuss a new study commissioned by the Contra Costa Economic Partnership and sponsored by Chevron. The report released by the Milken Institute and based on a thorough economic analysis of Contra Costa County outlines steps to achieve ongoing countywide prosperity in the face of serious challenges. What are these challenges? Uneven economic growth, high unemployment in urban centers, an underutilized workforce, and constrained tax revenue and government spending, to name a few. Though these problems sound daunting, there is great potential for growth in Contra Costa, the third largest county in the Bay Area with more than 1 million residents. After all, the county's diverse economy, rooted in mature petrochemical and steel manufacturing industries, brought in $53 billion in sales and employed 450,000 people in 2009. The Milken Report underlines three objectives to exploit the county's potential for growth and move the economy forward. One, leveraging existing industry strengths and targeting potential synergies. Two, capitalizing on underutilized resources. Nearly 40% of residents work outside the county. And promoting partnerships among stakeholders and jurisdictions. Here tonight to discuss the report's findings are three esteemed panelists. First, we welcome one of the report's authors, Kevin Clowden, director of the California Center and managing economist at the Milken Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
We also welcome David Twa, who is Contra Costa County Administrator, where he manages 8,500 employees and a budget of $2.4 billion. Hi, David.
Great to be here tonight.
And as we mentioned, our late addition and trooper here, Gary Kraft, we're pleased to have you here as well. You stepped in at the last moment for Kish. Gary is principal at Kraft Consulting Group, and I'm going to let him tell you a little bit more about himself.
Well, thank you. Kraft Consulting Group is a locally based economic development firm here in Contra Costa County. We do a lot of work analyzing local and regional economies and industry cluster studies and have done work for the Contra Costa Economic Partnership in preparing performance indexes of the county's economic performance over the last 10 years. So this is an opportunity to look at excellent report by the Milken Institute and a call to action on how we move forward in dealing with the 21st century economy.
Thank you, Gary. All right, we are ready to get started here, and I think I'll start with Kevin because I think, you know, in terms of trying to get a handle on the report, he can certainly help us with that. Now, one of the main findings which we heard was that this county underutilizes its talent pool. Something like 40% of the people who live here work somewhere else. It's kind of a place to live, not necessarily to work. How do you see the county changing that, and where do you think are the areas where there's the potential for the most growth to keep folks close to home?
Well, thank you. And what you've got in a situation for Contra Costa is that, yes, 40% leaving does mean that 60% stay. But the catch is that the 40% of the workforce that leaves every day is significantly weighted towards occupations that pay more. And that means that people who are employed in high-skilled positions, particularly if you look at the life and physical sciences, where two-thirds of the workforce in life and physical sciences commutes out of Contra Costa every day, that means that their positions with whatever you get, not only in terms of the benefits of what they spend while they're at work, but the benefits that come from that particular job, the what we call a multiplier effect. That means if they're at a company, that company spends money not only on the individuals, but on their capital purchases, on their items that they do day-to-day, their transportation, any other element that support that business. That benefit is going
to another county, whether it's Alameda, whether it's San Francisco, whether it's down in Santa Clara, whether it's elsewhere. And the goal is, with the report, and the goal for Contra Costa is to really recapture that value. It's not just enough to have a nice, well-paid individual or family or group living here. You want them to create the benefits of their employment and the supporting, whether it's in financial services, whether it's in construction, whether it's in engineering, whether it's in any other kind of support in or related industry. You want those additional jobs to be created here in Contra Costa, and you want the benefits of their employment, that income, to stay inside the county.
Do you see certain areas where the greatest potential for growth, for keeping them here, exists?
Well, absolutely. In terms of, interestingly enough, there are a lot of potential in terms of the life sciences. You've got a very thriving healthcare sector here in Contra Costa County. There's a number of ways that can be utilized to increase bioscience growth. You've got the fact that there are a number of established firms here in Contra Costa who have the ability to pull in more employment in terms of the financial services sector, in terms of professional services, consulting, management, and the like. Was alluded to earlier that another big area is that with the recent opening of the consolidated Lawrence Livermore campus, Lawrence Berkeley campus, forgive me, what you have is a chance to utilize that and to utilize a number of other factors in green technology and clean technology and various elements there. And, in fact, a number of companies here in Contra Costa have already been transitioning that way, and that's one of the big waves of the future.
All right. Thank you. David, I know from my stories that I've been doing in Contra Costa that the county has certainly had its share of struggles in the last few years, not only with the declining property values and property taxes, but with skyrocketing pension liabilities. At the same time, I know you've had to cut back services and programs. How do you provide services or continue to attract businesses? Has the county had to cut back on that as well?
Well, yes. Obviously, as I've said to many people, I actually came to Contra Costa County in 2008 just as the Great Recession was happening, and so I take part of the blame for the fact that it's been downhill ever since then. But essentially, we're now reached a point where at least we feel we've pretty much bottomed out and we're starting back up again. But a lot of the traditional tools that cities and counties have had to deal with the economic development have, in practical matter, gone away, especially the redevelopment districts. Essentially, the state has abolished those, and so that has created some real difficulties in terms of both the city and particularly the county standpoint of saying, all right, what should our role be in dealing with the economic development? Certainly, part of it is to try and work cooperatively with all of the other cities and other agencies in terms of looking at it. But we also have a very robust workforce development board, a 41-member board that actually looks at many of these issues and has been very active in terms of trying to develop how we do this. The other issue, though, which is given a lot of discussion in the report, but understandably we have very little control over it, is the whole issue of education. Mm-hmm. We have a problem in this county, as in many counties, and that is, I always view of it as kind of being two different economies, and that is you have kind of the central area of the county, which has been done relatively well. If you look at our unemployment rate, for example, it's less than 8%. Overall, the county unemployment rate is 8.5%. But when you go out to the East County and the West County, it's double digit. And if you talk about underemployment, it's in some cases it's close to 20%. More significantly, we see a dropout rate, especially in West County, that is extremely high compared to the rest of the county. And the issue of one of the studies, and I think it's mentioned in this one, essentially 40% of the students who graduate from high school are really ready to enter the college system. So when you talk about how do we develop an employment base for these growing industries, that's going to be one of the key areas that we have to focus on.
All right. Thank you, David. Gary, Contra Costa has to compete with all these other counties and trying to attract, you know, we talked about green tech, clean tech. What is it that this county can do to try to keep and attract some of these companies to this area as opposed to maybe the South Bay?
Right. Well, excellent question. As Kevin has pointed out, rightly pointed out, local job creation not only makes good economic sense, it also makes good sense from the standpoint of sustainable communities. We want to create those jobs here locally and grow those jobs locally and keep that the income that the workers make spending here locally. If you look at the traditional industries here in Contra Costa County, most of them are mature industries. There's not a lot of new job growth. Even though there is new job growth, it's not the kind of job growth that's needed to keep up with the population growth. So we have to start looking at where those new industries are going to come from and where that new job growth is going to occur. The Contra Costa Economic Partnership a few years ago looked at the East Bay's green economy and the emerging new industries in the clean tech sector that were located already here in Contra Costa County, particularly in the clean energy and innovative water technologies, a lot of which is coming out of research conducted by UC Berkeley or Lawrence Livermore Labs, Sandia Labs that are here locally. So it's that innovation and research that if we can capture that and here locally in terms of new companies and help those companies grow, that will be a big plus. In doing that, the Contra Costa Economic Partnership is looking at the Milken Institute study as a call to action to begin to develop a countywide regional strategy for helping to grow those kind of industries.
All right. Thank you, Gary. Kevin, back to you. I think, you know, again, in my own experience covering some of the issues here in this area, what do you see as some of the barriers to growth in this area? I know, for instance, Chevron, when they wanted to modernize their facility in Richmond, it ended up that it was halted by a judge. That sort of thing, does that act as a deterrent to others?
Well, it absolutely does. The regulatory environment and how and what we would consider to be the business climate is a big deal. Unfortunately, it's a big deal throughout California, but that's also fortunate because it means that if Contra Costa is able to be more transparent, if communities both at the city level and the county level are able to be more consistent and more open and faster in terms of permitting, in terms of standardization, in terms of looking at the process and saying, how can we incentivize the process to be more effective? Contra Costa already has the advantage that it's lower cost than many of the other counties in the area. If it comes across as more business friendly, then it has a significant advantage in terms of attracting and keeping jobs, and in particular facilitating new startups and small businesses, because one of the things that we found coming out of the last major recession is that the job losses and the job gains, what really makes or breaks the county, the state, the communities, is small and mid-sized business. And I am not discounting the large businesses because they're the ones who often provide the leverage for the small businesses to get the work they need to grow.
One of the things, David, you alluded to the redevelopment money and the loss of it, and one of the complexities of this county, it's kind of like the microclimates with the weather forecasting. It's what, 19 cities, micro communities that are all very different. When you lose the redevelopment money, for instance, I know Pittsburgh has used it extensively and has a downtown development that rivals, you know, almost none that I've seen. But what happens with those projects when that funding goes away, especially does it only affect the ones that are on the table, or does it affect the ones that are in process, and how does that work in terms of trying to grow the economy?
It's an extremely complex issue. Essentially, what has happened is there are what's called successor agencies, which are basically designed and set up under the state law to basically unwind all of the things that the redevelopment agencies were doing. So it's kind of a mixed bag, and that is the goal is to actually have the current projects completed. Excuse me. And on top of that, you have virtually all of these redevelopment projects where you have some form of bonds supporting them. And so those bonds have to get paid off, and there is a legal liability and requirement to do that. So one of the things that we're seeing is, you know, one of the arguments from the state was, yes, the redevelopment agencies are going away, but essentially the dollars will still be there because they were dollars that were being directed to the redevelopment agencies by the city and by the counties and others, and now those will be available for whatever projects local governments decide to do. And that is true, but that's years down the road because you have to pay off all of these bonds, first of all, and then the portion of the money has to go back to the state. So it's it will happen over time in terms of there will be something that will replace the redevelopment agencies, but that's a number of years out. So the question is, what do we do in the meantime? The other issue as it relates to the permitting, yes, you have 19 very independent cities and the county, and you have also all kinds of special districts that operate within every county, including Contra Costa County, the water districts, some of these others. And so essentially, if you talk about, gee, we want a uniform permitting process, the best you can really hope for is that collectively everybody will work together to speed up the process to remove as many barriers as possible. But the idea that realistically you're going to get all of these jurisdictions to agree on one permitting process is not very practical.
I also know from my husband and I building a house in Lafayette, a lot of times it depends who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's personalities involved in some of that. Gary, you can also, I think, speak to streamlining the process of permitting. There's a grant from the DOE.
Yes, the Contra Costa Economic Partnership received a grant from the U.S. Department of Energy looking at removing market barriers to the adoption of solar, rooftop solar installation systems in Contra Costa County. And one of the areas that we're looking at is streamlining the permitting process for solar. And as David mentioned, you have 19 cities plus the county, so you have 20 different jurisdictions. Imagine yourself being a solar contractor doing business in each of those cities with different processes, different requirements, different code interpretations, different inspectors, and it becomes a nightmare very quickly. So working with nine of our local jurisdictions, we have been developing standardized processes that can be uniform throughout the county with standardized plans and standardized interpretations of codes. Hopefully that will remove a lot of those regulatory barriers and create a more business-friendly environment that Kevin talked about.
All right. We do want to encourage all of you to submit your questions to our panelists. In the meantime, I do have a couple here. I will, pardon me if I don't quite read the handwriting correctly, but I think the gist of this one is what sort of advice, and this I guess would be for anybody, would you give to a teenager growing up in Contra Costa County right now in terms of what would be a good direction to follow a path that might keep them working and living in this community?
I guess, you know, obviously, the easy answer is stay in school. But as a practical matter, when we look at the statistical data, you know, a lot of talk has been about growing what's called the STEM agencies in terms of science, technology, engineering, and medical fields. And that's great, and those would be high-paying jobs in any county, including Contra Costa County. But you look at the data, and there's less than 20% of the students who are extremely interested in that. So the question is, what do you do with the other students coming out? And especially when, yes, we do have an industrial base still in Contra Costa County, there are good-paying jobs that don't necessarily require a college education, but they require some, you know, post-high school training. And so one of the things we've talked about is how do you develop those programs. And there's a lot of activities going around the county in terms of various groups that are actually dealing with those particular issues. So the question really is finding what's the interest of the particular students and then directing them as to where these resources are.
Anyone else want to address that?
I would actually wind up saying something similar, is that in an ideal world, if you could talk a student into doing something in terms of science, technology, engineering, or math, that would be wonderful because the demand is there. One of the things that we lost, ironically, when the space program stopped being as glamorous was something to catch people's imagination, a lot of students in school. And one of the things that's been very clear is that students, in many cases, don't see how their education applies in the real world. There's a disconnect that's happened back when, ironically, when people used to do shop in school, and that used to be a big deal, was back when people could relate that to an industrial job. People could relate it to their possible futures. People could relate some of the skills that they got in schools to what they considered to be the likely employment based on their families or friends. Well, there's so many different options now that it's a lot harder to do that. But one thing that's clear is that there is a tremendous demand among for a lot of different companies for students who have gotten a high school education, and as David said, just a bit of a post-high school training. Vocational training, ironically enough, is really in demand, especially whether it's through the community colleges, which Contra Costa actually has a very good, a very sophisticated two-year school system, or if it's through some of the other various training programs that are out there. That's a significant way to get a real boost in this student's income and future.
And there's demand for those. I mean, I think in this area especially, there's a high emphasis in Lafayette, Narinda, and these areas of, you know, go to college, go to college, go to Stanford, go to college. And maybe some kids aren't suited for that, right? And I guess so the message is that there could be some good paying jobs out there for folks who maybe just aren't necessarily going to go the traditional route or what they think is the way to go.
Absolutely. But definitely graduate from high school at the very least.
I just wanted to add, a lot of the jobs in the future are going to be more STEM, science, technology, engineering, math oriented. And so if you want to get a good job in the future, the students and the younger generation is going to have to get that kind of education. One of the things, actually two things that companies can do to help encourage students. One is the science fairs that are being held around the county. And I believe that some of our students here locally have gone on to the national and even the international competition and been very successful. There's also summer camps in different areas of the STEM courses, engineering, biotechnology, et cetera, that are actually interesting for the students and engaging for the students. So there are ways that the businesses in Contra Costa County can help encourage students to learn and get interested in these STEM courses.
All right, we have another question from the audience. What assurance is there that streamlining permitting processes will not involve a loss of substantive health and environmental protections, especially for residents near petrochemical facilities? So,
well, I think when we talk about streamlining from the governmental standpoint, we're talking about how do we speed up the process to get through it. We're not talking about doing away with many of the CEQA regulations or other things that basically provide the protection for the communities. So it's just a matter of how do we take our permitting process and move it along so it's not delayed, and the quicker we can get the plans out on the street, the quicker we can get things approved, the quicker you can move through the process.
Yeah, I'd like to reinforce what David is saying. We're not talking about eliminating these code requirements and regulatory requirements and standards that protect the public health and safety. What we're really talking about is business improvement processes, as David mentioned, that can help streamline and move along the review process without eliminating some of these health and safety requirements.
Yeah, one thing also just to be mindful about is that in many cases, regulatory barriers can be an impediment to actually cleaning up old brownfield sites. One of the most important things that can happen in development is the utilization of what is essentially not just eyesores, but could be areas with chemical waste. They could be areas that have essentially a lingering mess, and expediting the process, not eliminating the regulations, but just actually making it so that there's more of an incentive for businesses to take a chance on cleaning up these sites is a real positive, especially for older industrial cities.
Well, for older industrial cities or some of these older downtown areas, say in the east part of the county where there's not the same growth and population perhaps that there once was, some of those towns look a little bit ghost town-like to me. I mean, are there some plans there to – how do you fill up the empty storefronts, or should you, or should that become something else at this point?
I think that's a topic that you could spend days on. Essentially, one of the things I think you have to keep in mind is we're never the county doesn't stop at the county line in terms of jobs and opportunities. You know, we have a regional transportation system. We have all kinds of reasons why people would choose to live in Contra Costa County but may choose to work in San Francisco or Oakland or San Jose. So you can't discount the opportunities in terms of the quality of life that people would have. So I think one of the things we're going to see is, you know, we have this huge amount backlog, if you will, of foreclosed homes that have to be cleaned up. But essentially, we're already seeing signs of permit growth in terms of the county, in terms of new housing developments. It's going to take years to get back to where we were, but it will occur.
You have a lot of houses that are empty that were once occupied. Here's another question from the audience, and you guys can help me figure out how to fit this into the topic, but certainly a hot button issue around here. And is there a way to keep the Lafayette Fire Department open full time? I heard it's closing down. Well, I can tell you because I did this story, it's not closing down. There is one station that has been closed actually for a while.
Well, interestingly enough, there's another meeting going on as we speak this evening, in which is actually the county is presenting the materials as far as the closure of the fire station. That's probably a topic for another good discussion. But essentially, you know, the big question is, what is the cost of delivering those services, and what's the best way to deliver those services? In Lafayette's case, for example, over 90% of the calls in the city of Lafayette are medical calls. So why do we deliver, as I've always said, why are we delivering fire services with a 19th century model to try and cover those types of services? But that's essentially, you know, one of the things that happened there is the economy tanked. Essentially, we saw a significant drop in the revenues to the fire district, and it is a special district, so its revenues are separate from the county's. And once again, it's going to be a long time before that comes back. So one of the things that we're looking at is what are the new models that we might use to deliver those services?
All right. Thank you. Here's another one. Contrast the existing economic development attraction program with an improved one using this blueprint.
As in an economic development program that already exists that's been extremely effective? There's a catch in anything in like that, which is that any blueprint in terms of attracting businesses and cooperation isn't exactly the same in any county, because the mix of Contra Costa isn't the same as the mix in, say, not just Alameda, but say Mariposa County around Phoenix. The Phoenix area in Arizona have done a very good job of attracting businesses, of building things up, and luring companies in. But then you start dealing with the fact that that's not just what the county has done; it's also what the state is. It's what the environment there is. Orange County in California is an example of one that's been rather effective, but there is a clear contrast that goes on in that county in many ways in terms of recent development between, the haves and the have-nots, the areas where there's been significant growth and the areas where there haven't. There isn't a simple comparison. I could give you 20 different comparisons in 20 different cities that have all done elements of this, that have done very well. They've revitalized things. But the catch is that what really needs to happen in Contra Costa is tied as much to what makes Contra Costa unique.
And I think one of the things you have to keep in mind is if you look at some of these counties that have been perhaps more successful than us, one of the keys that I see at least is that there is one centralized large city. Mm-hmm. And essentially, whether it's Oakland as far as Alameda County, San Francisco, of course, which is the city and county of San Francisco, but the challenge that we face, because you have, again, 19 relatively smaller entities that you have to deal with in terms of trying to put together one comprehensive plan, just makes it that much more difficult.
I believe that there are three things that need to take place. First of all, when you mentioned business attraction, that is an outdated model. Studies have been done here in the East Bay for Alameda and Contra Costa County, which demonstrate that only about 6% of all new jobs or new businesses are created through a business attraction, that is bringing a company from outside the area into Contra Costa County. Even though we've had a lot of those, some major corporations like AAA, the GE, and even PG&E consolidating a bunch of activities here in Contra Costa County, most of those jobs in Contra Costa County in terms of new job growth are created by local companies expanding or new business startups. So a three-part economic development strategy would involve focusing on industry clusters, and as Kevin mentioned, each part of the county has different industry that are the strength of that particular subregion of the county that ought to be focused on. But industry clusters are looking at companies that not sell locally. They are not only sell locally, but they're also selling regionally, statewide, maybe globally. So they're bringing revenue into the county and creating job growth from that. The second part of the three-legged stool would be economic gardening, where you start to focus on those small businesses that Kevin's report talks about and have local cities and the county begin supporting the growth of those small and medium-sized businesses. And then the third leg of the stool is a workforce development industry sector strategy. And the Contra Costa County Workforce Development Board has adopted this industry sector initiative and are working in developing strategies around four different industry sectors to help grow this the local economy. So instead of business attraction, I think we need to be focusing more on who we have here locally and how we grow those local companies.
I mean, I also say even further is that if you the only way businesses you're going to tend to attract are ones really who are expanding an already existing presence or making a relatively small move. And the one danger always of playing the business attraction game is that it can create competition within the county between different cities over even luring businesses that are in one city and into another one. And one of the most important things that we've found and when we talk about models is that the most effective areas, the most effective cities, counties, regions, metropolitan areas, and so on, that build up businesses that develop a stronger base, they work together. It's not a matter of looking at it, as we'd say, a zero-sum game where there has to be winners and losers. They realize that if a new large employer happens to come into Richmond, so say like the Lawrence Berkeley campus and consolidation there, it's going to have benefits not just in Richmond. It's going to happen to have benefits in Walnut Creek. It's going to happen to have benefits in Lafayette because the new center of employment, the new center of activity needs all the different supports. And also it needs all the new small businesses, as Gary mentioned, is the entrepreneurship, it is facilitating those small businesses that really matters in the end because that is where the jobs come from.
All right. I just want to remind everyone you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today's discussion focuses on economic growth in Contra Costa County. We're here with Kevin Clowden, director of the California Center and managing economist at the Milken Institute, Gary Kraft, principal at Kraft Consulting, and David Twa, the Contra Costa County administrator. I'm Laura Anthony with ABC 7 News. I'm based in Contra Costa County. I also want to remind our live audience that if you'd like to ask a question of our panel at the microphone, you should feel free to line up now. I believe that is the microphone. And I have a stack of questions still in my hand here from the folks in the audience. Impact of telecommuting. People live here. Their employers are located outside Contra Costa County, but they get to work from home. What impact does that have on the 40-60% equation? As flexible work arrangements increase, is that beneficial, negative, or irrelevant?
From a data standpoint, the way it gets captured is where the person lists as being their primary location of employment. If they are a full telecommuter, then they're working out of their home. Then there is a benefit in that regard in terms of how they spend the money and so on. I will make a caveat on that is that a telecommuter is less likely to control the spending decisions of the overall company. So a lot, so even if they do commute, telecommute in as opposed to driving in, the main decisions in terms of the additional expenditures that go along with the overall business are still happening somewhere else. So a telecommuter will definitely have more of a positive impact locally than somebody who just commutes out entirely every day, but they're not going to have as much of an impact as somebody who is employed on site at a business center where the whole business is doing most of their expenditures and operations in the county.
All right. So why don't we take a question from this gentleman here at the microphone, sir?
Traditionally, particularly when counties are starting to grow at very early stages, the home building industry is a key employer and very important to all kinds of other industries that support it, both during the growth and then when finishing, when the homes are built, in supplying all their needs. This Contra Costa County is a fairly mature county, but there are still opportunities for the home building industry here. What are you considering? And also, the home building industry employs people across the economic spectrum and is very important for the West County and East County residents, I would think. So what are you suggesting that will help the home building industry in Contra Costa County?
Well, to that point, if you go back before the Great Recession, the building permits in general, which would be both for commercial as well as home building in Contra Costa County, was well over $1 billion in terms of permits issued on an annualized basis. That number dropped dramatically down to less than $500 million the last couple of years. We're starting to see it come back, and we've seen in terms of the permitting process from the county that we're now probably in the $600 to $700 million. So still got a long ways to go to get back to where we were. So, but we are starting to see that industry recover, and you're right, and that is it is still an important one in Contra Costa County, as is basically our industrial development. Essentially, from the county standpoint, again, our control is only over the unincorporated areas. So a lot of this in building that we see is going to occur within the confines of existing cities. But both on, especially on the East County side, we're starting to see some significant activity, and that's beneficial to the county in general. The other issue, of course, then is essentially, as we talked about, is how do we help deal with that? Well, we have very little say in terms of that other than the land use planning. We have, as you know, what we call urban limit lines, which is the goal is to try and basically have these developments occur as close as possible to existing developments for a lot of different reasons, one of which is, of course, to protect the environment, protect the open spaces, but also the fact that any of these developments require infrastructure. So whether it's sewer, water, what have you, a lot of it just has to occur naturally very close to existing developments, which means, of course, the cities become involved in it. The other area in which the county is very interested is we have 75-plus miles of shoreline, so running all the way from Berkeley over to Discovery Bay. So even though we talk about the STEM industries, we can't neglect the fact that there is plenty of opportunities for other types of development that can occur that can be supported by the waterfront. One of the areas the county has been very involved in is working with the Corps of Army Engineers on the dredging of the channels, because one of the things that we see is a lot of the ship traffic that could come into some of these areas basically is prohibited simply because the draft isn't sufficient. So there's something we can do. Again, a lot of it is dependent upon what happens within the city confines.
All right, here's another question. Assuming our students were prepared for STEM jobs, what action should be taken to attract high-tech employers?
One of the things that you can do directly is to actually link the workforce training programs and the educational programs with businesses. What you really you want to do in that case is that, especially when you're dealing with small and medium-sized businesses who are involved in high technology and don't have the resources for out-of-state recruitment, they don't have the resources to create their own job fairs, you have to create the mechanisms for matching STEM educated individuals with potential employers. And that means effective broader job fairs. That means science, that means creating online portals that specifically facilitate small and mid-sized businesses so the people who live here can see where the jobs are. They can have a better understanding of what the resources are and create a better match, because in the end, those positions have to really be filled. Those positions have to be coming from small and mid-sized companies rather than obviously recruiting big ones.
I would like to add that STEM education doesn't necessarily imply you're going to go to work in a high-tech industry. There are a lot of existing jobs in traditional industries that require that advanced engineering degree or science degree, and there's an incumbent workforce. It's the aging baby boom population that's beginning to retire, and we need to backfill all of those jobs with people that have and a younger generation that has the kind of science and engineering and technology background to fit into to those programs.
All right. I have two questions here that sort of go back to your statement, Kevin, about the healthcare sector. This one, I think, synopsizes both. It says the South Bay has Silicon Valley. Raleigh-Durham has Research Triangle Park. You mentioned Contra Costa County trying to focus on life and biosciences. What is the county doing now to attract those companies and make this the premier headquarters for that industry?
Well, first things first, be careful about being the premier headquarters for an industry, because everybody wants to be the premier headquarters for an industry. And also just be mindful when you look at Research Triangle Park. Everybody always talks about it as being this sort of 80s phenomenon or this 90s phenomenon. Research Triangle was actually set up back in the late 50s and early 60s. It took a while to grow. What in terms of specific applications right now, David and Gary could talk a lot more about that, but in terms of what can and should happen is that a lot of it comes down to what we've been talking about already, which is it's the workforce. It is the enabling of the smaller businesses. It is the facilitating of the startups. The fact is that creating additional linkages between the educational institutions, particularly the two-year schools or the satellite campuses of the four-year universities that are here in Contra Costa, is very significant. Creating linkages in terms of the workforce, creating opportunities for the startups is a major step in the right direction, because Silicon Valley grew around startups. It grew out of university spinoffs, spinoffs of larger companies, and so on. And you have to be patient. You don't just become number one even 5 or 10 years.
I think one of the areas that you also have to consider is as I look out on this audience and look at myself, we're an aging population, which means there's going to be more and more interest in terms of the medical field as it relates to delivering the services for all of us who are the aging baby boomers. So one of the things that's happening, of course, with the Affordable Care Act, whether you agree with it or not, is essentially there's going to be significant changes in how we deliver medical services to this population. And one of the things that we're looking at in the county, because obviously not only do we run a county hospital, but we also run a county health plan in terms of, as we look out, essentially there's going to be more demand for jobs in that particular field. And there's an area, it's not just an industry in itself in terms of focusing just on the medical, but also just all the supporting agencies that are going to arise as a result of that.
Contra Costa County actually has several major opportunity areas. Kevin mentioned earlier the Lawrence Livermore National Lab field facility in Richmond. That's a huge opportunity for us to capture some employment there. The Conquer Naval Weapons Station is another opportunity that should be looked at. And then the third area is the industrial waterfront that has been underutilized over the last 20-plus years. And there's opportunities to look at that and to revitalize those areas.
But you just touched on a couple of the questions that I was going to ask. One of our folks here wanted to know, could the panelists discuss the Concord Naval Weapons Station? What opportunities does it present short-term and long-term?
Well, I happen to be a believer that instead of focusing solely on housing for the Concord Naval Weapons Station, that we really should look at it as an opportunity to create a major employment center and to attract businesses there, so we're not exporting this 40% of our workforce, our skilled workforce, by the way, that goes to Silicon Valley or San Francisco on a daily basis, but to attract those kind of businesses and industries that will keep that workforce here locally and reduce a lot of the congestion that's on our freeways.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, having seen a number of base realignment decisions in various areas, one of the places that I think is a great example, it's not even close to being the same, but if you want an in-state example of an effective utilization of space, you can contrast what Long Beach did with what Orange County did. Long Beach took what was the former naval shipyards and transformed it into a massive shipping center, and it catapulted Long Beach into the big leagues in terms of container port traffic. It was a very effective utilization. It didn't involve major rezoning. It didn't involve massive cleanup. Orange County was very idealistic when the El Toro Naval Air Station closed down. They put it up for a vote, which is kind of dangerous because when that happens, then people always choose the one that they think sounds the nicest, which was a big park. Well, there's a problem is with any major military facilities, you have to clean it up. So the vast majority of this big park is still essentially filled with oil in the soil and various other chemicals and massive cleanups. They've gotten to maybe a quarter of the area at best. And housing itself, as much as everybody always wants a space for housing, if you don't tie it into the jobs, and once again, we want the jobs to stay here in Contra Costa County, then it's an incomplete solution.
And then Gary also touched on, or David did, on the aging population. The question is, how will the aging population impact growth? I know from a friend whose son has started a plumbing business in this area. He wants to pay somebody $32 an hour to be a plumber, and he can't find a plumber that can do the work. We're still going to need plumbers, aren't we?
Well, obviously. I think, again, that it does raise the issue, and that is, in fact, you just saw there was an article in the paper this past week about the fact that the population growth in terms of new babies is essentially not enough to replenish, if you will, of course, everybody who is either retiring or leaving this planet. So the question becomes, how do you basically do two things, one of which is replace all the jobs that are going to become open. And we face that with the county. We have basically, as I said, we have about 8,500 jobs in terms of employees right now. That's about 1,000 less than we had 4 years ago. And a lot of that has to do with the economy in terms of what happened. But we've also said, realistically, we can't, even if we could find the people, we couldn't afford to replace all of those who have left. So one of the things that you look at is what is the technology that will allow you to do the same work a lot quicker and with fewer people. I use the analogy, of course, of essentially, as we know, what they've talked about is singularity, which is, of course, the theory that by 2028, computers will be able to talk to each other, and essentially we won't be necessary anymore. But the whole issue it raises is, when I look at it, we have people who answer the phone because people have questions and they want to know what the county is doing. There may be a mechanism simply to say, if you have something that can provide their answers, and especially with the technology that's there today, you may not need those particular people. But you do need a higher standard in terms of both the training as well as education of individuals. I use the example of my grandson, who's 10, and of course has his own iPhone 5, which most children of his age apparently do have. And so he said to me, Grandpa, he said, watch this. And so he goes to Ceres and he says, where can I get my hair cut? And Ceres says to him, oh, Noah, your hair looks fine the way it is. But then she says, here are five barbershops within X number of miles of where you live. Really, when you look at it, I think that's one of the things in terms of how do we manage these expectations, especially of our growing elderly population, in terms of how do they get their services and how do we deliver them.
And Siri can't do my plumbing either, right?
No.
Happens now.
Here's another good one. Regarding the bonds that finance development, has Contra Costa County taken advantage of record low interest rates to refinance the bond loans? San Ramon Valley Unified School District did that and was able to lower the request for the latest bond measure put on the ballot.
We actually have done that repeatedly over the last 4 years in terms of basically refinancing any bonds that we could. The issue that has happened now, of course, is essentially even though the interest rates are low because of essentially a lot of the credit risks, if you will, we've reached the point where there's very little from the county standpoint that we can refinance. We do have some pension obligation bonds that we're looking at potentially could be refinanced. But anything that we could refinance, we've pretty much have done so. And I think that's pretty much true of most of the cities and special districts as well.
All right. We have a live person over there, sir. What is your question?
Yeah, Kevin, to follow up on your comment about our relatively robust healthcare sector and trying to leverage that to grow the bioscience industry, could you amplify that a little bit? Are there any kind of examples, case studies, or best practices you could point to where there has been other strong healthcare sectors that have transitioned to creating bioscience clusters? Thank you.
Certainly. There have been a number of cases around the country where it's not that there's a transition. I really have to say it's a synergy, because what you have two things that go into it with the healthcare sector. Is one is you have an existing pool of skilled individuals who are doctors and others who do the training. The other thing is that you have an opportunity to partner up in terms of research. An effective healthcare center could work in terms of clinical trials. It can work in terms of partnering for outright direct research. And it can create some connections with smaller companies who can do a lot of the spin-off and connected work. One of the best models for that's actually been the Mayo Clinic, where they've not only done that up in Minnesota, but they've actually done operations in terms of clinical trials and connections to local healthcare in Arizona and Florida. Yeah. Now, as you may guess, that Arizona and Florida also have certain demographics in their favor. There's been a number of places around the country. Pennsylvania, particularly Philadelphia, has been a real model in that regard, where they have a number of hospitals that have been used as teaching hospitals, as connected opportunities, and they work with the universities and the business sector. And it's really a place to look at.
All right. We have couple minutes for this one. What role will agriculture play in the next 15 years? You have a certain portion of the county that certainly is devoted to that.
In terms of the growth of jobs, relatively little as a practical matter. As an industry, certainly there's some opportunities, but as a percentage, there's very little agricultural activity within Contra Costa County. Essentially, what area is not incorporated within the cities, for example, is taken up pretty much by the mountain. So that although we do have some open space, from an agricultural standpoint, we don't see that as going to be a growing industry in the county.
I think another question from that same individual, and I would like to know this as well. Are we looking for professional sports teams to locate here? I think there's a couple that might be looking for homes.
I don't know that anybody makes any money off of relocating professional sports teams.
So. Well, some people make money. It just doesn't mean the county will make money.
Right. All right. And we have time, I think, for one more question for yes, sir.
You spoke earlier about 19 cities and 19 different criteria for permits. I'm sure some efforts have been made, but has enough effort been made to kind of attempt to regionalize some of these things, whereby you can have some cities just getting together and saying, look, it makes life a lot easier for the people who are trying to do business here if they don't have to have a new set of rules or abide by and learn a new set of rules in each different entity.
There have been a number of examples in which cities in Contra Costa County have worked together in clusters to deal with a number of these issues. So it's not like that you have really 19 totally separate ones, but essentially I think what you have to understand is as we look at developing some of these industries, and especially industry clusters, in terms of what would be necessary to try and get a focus, really when you think of this in terms of Contra Costa County, if you want to look at it on a regional basis, there's really three separate counties. The Central County, which has a totally different set of circumstances than East County and West County has. So there are, in terms of groupings of the counties, that tend to work well together, but a lot of it has to depend upon the geography. And as we talk about, you know, the fact that a number of people go outside the county, in some respects, that's not necessarily bad when you think about it, because we have a regional system, whether you talk about BART or other transit systems, other things. It's not necessarily bad that people work in other areas. It's just that we would like to capture more of that.
All right. Now we are at the point where we have time for just one more question. And I think just to keep it simple, I know in our daily lives, when I have a lot to do, I try to figure out what is the thing I need to do first. What is the thing, and each of you will have maybe 45 seconds, what is the one thing that on your to-do list for this county to promote economic growth, what's the first thing you do?
I'll go first. Very simple. Collaborate.
One of the areas that we're working on right now is in terms of the East County, and that is some development in terms of the industrial area along the waterfront, and looking at how all of the communities in that area can cooperate together. And that'll be a big push within the next year. Federal Glover, who is the current chair of the county board this year, has indicated this is one of his major projects that he wants to look at in terms of how we can develop more of that base.
And I say that Gary took the best line, but it really comes down to, just even beyond collaborate, is share information. That the most important thing that businesses can do, that educational facilities can do, that that can be done at the city level, at the county level, is make people aware of the opportunities, make people aware of what kind of jobs there are, make people aware of where the demand is. When you start with that, both inside the county and outside the county, that's when you start making things happen.
So don't compete so much.
No. Very much.
All right. Thank you all. Thank you to our panelists. It's Kevin Clowden, Director of the California Center and Managing Economist at the Milken Institute, Gary Kraft, who's the principal at Kraft Consulting Group, and David Twa, the Contra Costa County Administrator. We'd also like to thank our audience here and on the radio. I'm Laura Anthony, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than a century of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.